And I appreciate the audience. I know it's the end of a long day, so some of you are still keeping your eyes open while the brain is shut, so it's not bad. So this is a joint work with my graduate student, Sofia Coppola. It's about Latin translation. So let me start with the main motivation of the work. I try to be nice to my dear physicist friends, so not to be too computer sciencey, but the main motivation of the work that I've been playing with on the measurement-based model is due to the parallel algorithm, okay? So this is a big question in the classical computer science, that how can we design a parallel algorithm for given task, okay? So it's, whether it's quantum or classical, we want to know, and what are the tools there. So why should we care about parallel algorithm in the quantum world, okay? So one thing, one motivation, physical motivation, is that, of course, minimizing the quantum depths is a way around the coherence. So we ideally like to make sure, I mean, I'll give definition of what do I mean by depths and parallelization, so you don't get too much lost. But so idea is that, like, if you can make your computation in a logarithmic depth as parallel as possible, so you're protecting your computation better. So it's important. There is also a new result in complexity theory. If you go to the complexity zoo, there is a whole hierarchy just when it's restricted to the notion of the depths, even within the polynomial time. And there is big open question there, so we'd like to answer it. And Richard, I think a couple of years ago, had this nice conjecture about that, in fact, any polynomial time quantum algorithm can be implemented with only logarithmic layer, okay? I come, I'll discuss about, despite of his new conjecture, what will happen to our world. But so let's try to understand. So this would be, again, is a very nice story. If we can show that any polynomial time algorithm, in fact, needs only logarithmic layer with classical post-processing, again, is a promising idea. And our famous Shor's algorithm, thanks to Richard Cleave and John Matras, has that property, that the quantum Fourier transform is logarithmic layer and the rest is classical post-processing. So we'd like to be able to show that any quantum computing can be on that. And on the other hand, the notion of depth complexity is a new measure to compare quantum models. We know that all the quantum models are equivalent in computational complexity, okay? So you kind of say that, okay, we need to shrug our shoulder. We're not that interested about different one, and it's an issue of the physics because we just play with the model that we like. But when, as what I will discuss, that so you see that, like, when it's come to this more fine-tuned notion like depth complexity, then different models of quantum computer are not equivalent. So these are the type of motivation behind this long program about depth complexity. So, but what if quantum computing is Shabby-Fazier classically? So this is what kind of seems to be the possibility that quantum polynomial computing will be BPP. Okay, so we don't get any power out of that. So what will happen then? So we have two scenarios that will let us to live happily still. The one thing is that, up to my knowledge, none of these classical Shabby-Fazier algorithm are parallel. They don't have logarithmic depths. I mean, I haven't checked all the details, but the famous one, none of them are actually can be done in a logarithmic depth. So what does it mean? It means that it could be this class, NIC class, which is a stand for classical logarithmic parallelizable algorithm, it's BQP. I didn't know what I meant. But what I'm trying to say is that it could be that although quantum computing doesn't give you any speed up over a classical computer, but it can be still intrinsically more parallel, okay? So is that, you know, in few years' times when you have your quantum computer sitting in front of you and you're hesitating, shall I run my quantum algorithm, my quantum computer, or I'll run it my classical computer and unsimulated, you don't know which one to go, you know that maybe it's still very interesting to do it on your quantum computer because it's more parallel, okay? But apart from this sort of seemingly joke motivation, is a more, shall I say, fundamental question that I like to know the answer, is that, okay, it seems that entanglement maybe not to be the responsible for speed up on computation, but it could be responsible for a very particular parallelization. So that's the kind of question. It's nice to know that if that is what entanglement is actually giving us, and given the non-local structure, if it's not too surprising. So, or the other possibility is that this was the scenario that actually there was a difference between quantum world and classical world. The other scenario is this one, is that, no, this class BPP is exactly equal to BQP, and we have learned that all the algorithm can be simulated with the logarithmic depths, all of those things. Then we have a new method for parallelization of classical algorithm, which again is interesting because there are some long-standing simple algorithms like division, Euclidean division, which still don't know how to make them more parallel, and there is no solution for that. So it could be within this world, we can always go to the quantum, get the parallel things, and then use our clever simulation, which is also parallel, and then come up with the classical algorithm. So all I'm trying to say is that in both scenarios, despite what Richard is proving, we will be happy. So it's nice to carry on with this idea of trying to do what can we do in the quantum world with parallel questions. So is it more or less the motivation is clear? Okay, so where to start? So I'm already saying that I already say the word is like the thing that is very non-classical is entanglement, and I like to understand if the entanglement is responsible for any parallelization. So naturally, where to start is we want to have a very quantum model of computing where entanglement is the main ingredient. So we can play directly with that. Okay, so where to search for that? Luckily, many audience, Robert, Daniel, many other people already thought about that. And we have such a nice model, measurement-based quantum computing, okay, which the entanglement is essential part of it. So in order to convince you a little bit, maybe you're already convinced that, oh yeah, things are more parallel, all of this thing, but just to see how, why this is a very, very good candidate to study notion of quantum parallelism, let me consider a much simpler model, which is projection-based quantum computing. So this is going to be still a very simple, quick introduction here to convince you that this is the model to talk about parallelization. Okay, so what is a projection-based quantum computing? So we have an initial entangled state, the graph state. You all heard about it. So you have such a things where the qubit are the vertices are the plus state, and instead of with the cluster, I'm talking about a particular graph because I'm talking a particular algorithm. Doesn't make a difference, and just to keep it a bit in a more quantum input, quantum output world. Again, doesn't matter if you like classical input, classical output, you prefer everything in plus. But this notation come back in during the talk. So whenever I have this rectangular, that means quantum input, the arbitrary input of the previous computation that you can plug into this new thing. And the qubit, which are white circle, means that they haven't been measured. So not everything is measured. They are the output coming up. So, okay, so the projection-based quantum computing is such a model. So you start with a graph state with quantum input, quantum output, and then you have a sequence of one qubit XY measurement. Okay? This is basically the measurement-based model that we have been seeing it. Instead of measurement, we're doing projection. So what are the properties of this model? So we know that it's universal, the same way that you all know quantum computing, measurement-based quantum computing, one-way model is universal. So that's a very simple universal model. Scott Aronson has already proved that this post-selection model is actually extremely powerful, is post-BQP is equal PP, okay? So that's why we might not believe such a post-selection model can ever exist. And Scott's model is more or less the same. So he was talking about having a polynomial time circuit and just have one qubit being post-selected, which is not too much different enough. You can translate it. So the same sort of result can be easily seen in this one. But the nice thing that you all already seen is that any computation has constant depths. Okay, any computation, doesn't matter from which class is coming. Okay, that's very obvious, but let me still explain it why in that model that's the case. Because preparation depths of any graph state is equal to the maximum degree of the graph. That's a very simple thing, I think, in a couple of papers of Simone and Mehdi and Peter, and then later on Anne proved that, see, all you need to find for the parallel implementation of the graph is matching. So that's the maximum degree of graph. Then you pick up, instead of picking up a graph, you pick up your favorite universal resource, which has constant degree, like the cluster state. So the preparation of any, doesn't matter if you have exponential time algorithm that you're trying to implement, but preparation is constant. And then you have the only thing you need to do is just doing a projection at once. So this was like a long way of saying that why projection-based and hence measurement-based model is already suggesting that's the good place to look at this very, very parallel model because the depth is very small. Okay, so what's the roadwork now that we kind of see that? Oh, actually, one last thing before I go to the start my talk. Again, to see again why so nice, I mean, it is nice because we all get together here to talk about measurement model, but another way to see why measurement-based model offer us the possibility of writing any parallel algorithm for any unitary, you can easily do this in the projection-based model. So how do we do that? This is based on the work that I did in Neil. So we know that if this is a linear algebra theorem, that any unitary can be written in this quadratic form. Okay, don't need to really parse it, it's a simple thing. But this quadratic form, sometimes you need to have exponentially many auxiliary qubits, sometimes you need to have only polynomially many. So once you write this unitary in this, like for example, QFD has such a form, okay? Once you write it that, then you have this quadratic form expansion. I'm not gonna bother you with the details, but this quadratic form is giving you already directly your algorithm. How does it give? You read from this binary element, more or less your entanglement graph that you are required. Then from this other parameter theta, you can read the angle of your projection. So here we go. So in this projection-based quantum computing, I can write directly parallel with constant depth algorithm for any model, for any unitary operator given to us, okay? So by now you should pretty be convinced that this is where to start and trying to search for our ultimate real. You have a question, Mike? Okay. For our real quantum computing. So now I'm gonna tell you, so what's the program? What's the roadmap to do it? So clearly, we don't want to live in projection-based quantum computing. We want to go from projection-based, now that we understand it, to the measurement-based model. So that's one way to go, how to transfer projection-based computing to the measurement-based computing. This is within the question that we address in the notion of determinism, determinism in measurement-based quantum computing, addressing the question of how to transfer projection to measurement. And that's with the construction of flow and generalized flow. So this was introduced in this two paper with people, and then happily, nicely, luckily, people come up with Neil and Simone and Mehdi come up with the efficient algorithm, polynomial time algorithm to constructing this thing. So we have now a polynomial way. I'll review this study to put it in perspective. So we know that these are the things required to go from projection to measurement, and we know that actually how to construct them. So that's quite nice to give us. So that's one way to go. Another way to search for this parallel structure is, okay, so now that we know that measurement-based is a good candidate, so let's try to see the connection between quantum circuit and measurement-based model and see what you're gonna learn. And that's the work that I did with Anne. You can ask more questions from her. I'm not gonna talk about that, so just briefly just to mention, because the idea that comes from here is actually show up again later on. So in the connection between quantum circuit and measurement-based model, this kind of led us to learn what makes measurement-based model parallel. And of course, you kind of, for physically people, they already knew that this Clifford operation, that we can do it in one go, was a very advantageous. And so the main thing, the main structural result is that we could see now, we come up with the technique of how to insert this Clifford operator between non-Clifford operator and come with a parallel algorithm. So this gave us an automated technique for parallelizing quantum circuit. And more importantly, just to support the case that I'm putting here, is that we showed a logarithmic depth separation between measurement-based quantum computing and quantum circuit computing, okay? So I don't know how to speculate it. Is it due to the entanglement in the measurement-based model? Is it because of the classical control that we're putting it? Which is actually important thing just to mention, that this model, it showed that like classical control is good to have it, because some part of computation can be done classically. You do it classically. Whereas in the circuit model, everything is done quantumly. So there is again room to completely understand, but Let me just show you one slide on those things so that the structural result come out of it. This sort of the circuit. This kind of circuit is written in such a way that between any non-Clifford gate, which are this J gate, we have inserted this magical Clifford, which is some sequence of X and Y. And this will allow you to give us a constant depth measurement pattern. So this magical Clifford, again, will show up in the rest of the talk that I want to show you, that like we're learning them again from measurement-based model. So it's a combination of all those toolbox. Okay, so before I carry on, let me tell you where Sophie comes to picture. Yeah. What will happen is that these J gates are a non-Clifford gate. Okay, it's like a phase gate. Okay, so there is some notion called influencing paths, all the wire or anything that you can go down, but that's technicality. So this circuit is built in such a way that between any two non-Clifford gates sitting on a influencing path, there is a Clifford, the magical Clifford, this kind of Hadamard with I gate sitting there. But when you do that, this circuit will translate to a measurement pattern with constant depth. So these Clifford are resetting the depth. This Clifford will make this non-Clifford to be able to be parallelized in the same layer. So the Clifford is resetting. Not only the Clifford gate can be done right at the beginning and then we can get rid of them, but sometimes actually it's good to have them because they are resetting the computation. So it doesn't need to have many layers. So you have one layer of all the Clifford and one layer of all the non-Clifford operators to be done in the circuit picture of it. Okay, so what I will try to quickly to show you is this question of how to go from projection-based computation to measurement-based quantum computing. But before I go there, as I say, I want to show you where the title of the talk and where the whole work is coming from. So in the measurement-based quantum computing, so I'm kind of looking at the connection between measurement-based quantum computing, going to the quantum circuit and coming back and learning about that. You will have such a computation. You will have such a graph. It's a normal graph state, whatever structure I have, three input, three output. And on top of this graph state, you might have such a computation. What those arrows show, that means that you do some measurement and you do correction. Where the arrow is showing you measurement here, correction on this tree, measurement here, and correction on those other things. I will explain that in a very simple graphical language. Okay, but what will happen when we translate back this one? We have a local translation, which knows exactly how each gate is implementing. You will get such a circuit. Okay, you will get this nice circuit which has this stretching a causal control Z. That this control Z, the other part of it is acting there. Okay, so clearly this is, okay, let me write it this one, that's the same thing. Clearly this is where the time-like loop is coming into the picture and hence lost in translation, that you, the translation of that circuit seems to implement something with the time-like curves, okay, which you need to have taken this thing back to there, okay. So, and of course, it's not really time-like curve because this is a normal unitary that we have a causal and impossible implementation of it. So what it's happening is that this is not a new roadmap, but apparently among our quantum circuit with time-like curves, there are particular ones that can be translated to the normal and runnable measurement computing, and that's a new path, that there's a new way to search for this parallel thing. We go in this bizarre object, okay, which we can define, of course, semantic and all the structure of it. And some of them will translate to any nice low-depth pattern. And those are interesting because we already know that this kind of graph are the minimum depths that can give. You cannot get better than the G-flow when I'm talking about it. So this time-like curve is a new roadmap. So what I probably won't get to talk about yet, and it's not important, what is the meaning of this thing? So some of you have seen you can define this object quantum circuit using the consistency relationship that, you know, if you have such a curve, you just cut it and you say that you put the consistency relation that the row coming out of here should be the same row that goes here and the row coming out of here should be the same row go out there. This is, I think, the Deutsch proposal how to define and all those paradigms goes out, but I don't care about the model, but you have semantic of running this thing, or you can define this thing in terms of post-selection, and again, this was Charles Bennett and many other people suggested how kind of post-selection picture will implement for you this time-like curves, okay? And or even, you can even think of it when I want to do calculate with this stuff and to show it, you can do it even simpler. So whenever you see this control Z, that that is bizarre one. You just write your branches, and then later on when you come here, you will know that which branches you come from and introduce a minus one. So all of them are nonlinear function, okay? And the main result that I would like to show you that among this nonlinear, seemingly nonlinear function, there are some of them, if this loop has a particular structure, which link n to a linear normal quantum mechanical function, okay? And that's very simple graph theoretical property. Yeah, Ancilla can also help you, and that's, I'll come back to that. That would be in the issue of opening loops, because what I'm proposing is let's go and leave in that one, try to satisfy the condition that I'm showing that you need to satisfy, and then try to open the loop. And I think then for opening of the loop, then you need to have the Ancilla, and hopefully the depth will flow. This is basically the end of the talk, so you can leave now.
timeline? It's not relativity timeline,
right? Yeah, well, I don't know, because
Somebody
called it time-like loop, time-like cap, and I want to be in PI, so.
There's no space-like or light-like.
No, I think this is
time ordering. There is a time ordering here, time which order. You violate.
Exactly.
So in the circuit, you have a time clicking, and then you have an effect in the past influencing the future.
So some causal relation.
Okay, so luckily I don't need to introduce measure-based quantum computing. You all heard about it, but just very quickly about the notation. So I might write this notation, and I means the qubit I is prepared in the state class. Mi alpha is the usual xy measurement, which is projection into this xy plane, xy measurement to 0 plus a alpha, and the result of that measurement is either 0, 1, so Si, Eij is the equator of z. And then you have poly correction, and these are the feedforward structure, which are very, very essential, the adaptive ideals that we're saying. Okay, so how do we go from projection to measurement? That's the question that's raised beforehand, and it's very important, and we know that that's the essential in the measurement-based model. Okay, so I said that like we have a projection base, I can write an algorithm for any projection base, and then that's the projection to the state plus alpha. So if I have a projection, I can always write it this form, yeah? So if I want to replace it with a measurement, how do I replace it with measurement? I put this bizarre correction beforehand. And that's is mathematical rewriting. Okay, it's an anachronical correction. Somebody comes from the future and tells me that, okay, you have gone to the wrong branch, okay, so then I can now implement the Z, which takes me to the correct branch. So when I'm implementing projection. Okay, so this is completely mathematical notation of writing. If I could have had a time-like loop or whatever, could have told me exactly which rotation I need to do beforehand of doing it, so when I'm doing my measurement, it's guaranteed to make the projection. So we cannot do that. So how does it work in the measurement-based model? Well, entanglement is coming to help us. Entanglement will give us a solution to how to implement this anachronical correction. So if I'm making a measurement, this qubit, and that qubit has been entangled with other qubit which has been prepared in the state plus, then instead of doing that anachronical correction here, I can do something in there. And that's the mathematical relation, okay? So if I had this projection, but before that projection, that qubit was entangled with another qubit, then that equation is exactly equal to this equation. So this anachronical correction on qubit I will be translated to two possible normal correction on qubit J. So hence, I can, and that little correction will hit to the state plus, x on state plus is plus, so that correction disappears. This other correction, so the anachronical z correction on the qubit that I want to measure is equivalent of applying an x correction on the qubit which is in future and I haven't measured. For the people who are familiar with the stabilizer formalism, it's very easy to see that what I'm doing here, I know that I have a graph of state, I can apply the stabilizer at this qubit. The stabilizer at this qubit introduce an x here and a z here, and that's it, cancel the anachronical z correction. So that's the very, very simple idea of how to transform a projection to the measurement. Now, the next question is that, okay, can I always do that? Do I have enough entanglement and enough link and enough place to apply this thing and to do it? And the answer is given by this thing that I'm saying in the next slide. So another way to look at this thing is just, I'm putting this one because the discussion came again. I mean, I'm going to show you something very mathematical, graphical thing, nothing to do with the physics of it. But if you like, this is the way that is happening in the measurement-based model, that how from supposedly measurement which creating noise, and you keep branching in the model, you come back to the determinism. That's the beauty of the whole model, okay? So that what does mean deterministic? A pattern is deterministic if all the branches are the same. It's independent of which branch you're going, all of them give you the same computation, okay? That's what's happening in the original one-way model. That's the whole essential of the model. We're doing measurements, okay, but it's still we're implementing unitary operator. So what we like to give is that we want to give a necessary and sufficient condition for determinism based on the geometry of entanglement, because that's what we like to when we write the program. So I'll show you then the property that you look at the geometry of a graph, and from the geometry of a graph, you can present whether there is a correction strategy to make sure that your computation become deterministic. Of course, another way is to do all the measurement and try to at each time and cleverly see what correction you need to be done, but it's not necessary to be done that way. Yeah, but this the thing that I'm showing, you don't need to do it at every time step is this static analysis. So from the geometry of graph, so just from the geometry of graph, independent of the angle of measurement, you can define what strategy you need to take. When it comes to the time of computation, you do those things at this step. Of course, you do it step by step when it comes, but which strategy needs to be done is designed and is obtained before you even start your computation.
When you know the whole geometry.
That's the program.
The global structure.
Yeah, exactly. It's the program. So that's the mathematical definition of it, and that's the example that I'm going to show you. So the mathematical definition is that you're given such an entanglement graph, I show you with the input and output, then we say that this thing has flow. Maybe causal flow is a good name. If there exists a map from complement and output, means the qubit that will be measured, to non-input, means the qubit that have been prepared in plus. So there is a sort of movement from the input to output. And that function should come with this partial order, which is the normal causal structure or temporal order that we see in a measurement model that's defined layer by layer. This function needs to satisfy some condition. That first condition means that the x should be entangled. There should be an h between x and f of x. F of x, where you want to apply your correction, should be in the future. And anything which is entangled to f of x should be in the future. This is the definition of it. How does it work and why it's working? I'll explain in a second. So imagine this is your graph that we saw. For these are input, these are output. So if this one, does it have a flow? And we want to, again, from the geometry, give that flow. And the answer is yes, that's the flow. So these are my functions. So this qubit, f of that qubit is that one, f of this one is this one, f of this is that one, and these are the temporal order, these are the partial order. It means that whenever you make a measurement here, that's the qubit which will correct it for you, and you apply the stabilizer on that. This is the qubit in measure, that's the qubit that's correcting it. And I always remember my correction because I want to turn the anachronical correction to a possible correction, so I need to apply my stabilizer in the future to make sure that it's going up. Okay, is it clear? Okay, as I said, Neil already defined a polynomial time algorithm. So you give a graph a state, and his algorithm will decide whether such a graph has a flow, and if it has, it gives you error, it doesn't have a flow. So and the important part is like this notion of correcting measurement and turning the anachronical to possible correction or turning noise to determinism, whatever you like. But idea, you get the qubit and now you correct it to something else. So a couple of results on that thing, just to put it in perspective in how this links to the circuit model. If a pattern has a flow, first of all, it's uniformly and strongly deterministic. What it means that basically it doesn't matter which angle of measurement you're performing. If it has a flow, independent of the angle of measurement, you always get deterministic computation. This is very much the nature of the entanglement and geometry of entanglement, not anything to do with the angle of measurement. The angle of measurement implement different unitary. So
the flow
completely depends on the geometry of your entanglement.
But the noise actually, there's some variation at every time step, and
yes,
you're claiming that you can actually pre-design everything from the knowledge of the whole global structure of the graph and apply to every individual differently at different time steps.
Precisely. Okay. So, and the other thing that we know, because, so basically another way this term says, if you have a pattern with a flow, then you're implementing a unitary embedding, okay? So pattern with flow will allow you the determinism and the unitary embedding. And now, okay, so if it's unitary embedding, so we should be able to go back to the circuit. you might be wondering, what am I doing? I could have started from the circuit and go there and get the pattern, but we want to make sure that directly from there, because remember the plan was that I start with the projection and I translate it to the measurement. So how do I get out this circuit out of it, and in order to see how the timeline comes to picture? The simple thing that you have already seen, so quickly remind you, so if you have such a graph with two input and two output overlapping, this is basically my control Z, that was the definition. And if you have a graph that you're measuring this qubit and based on the result of it you apply, I think that's a phase Hadamard or J gate that you're implementing, okay? So that's what I will relate it after a J gate. So one little thing, so I want to decompose from my big measurement pattern, start getting my little element to go ahead. So that's the star pattern is the most atomic pattern that you can imagine comes out of it. So you have one input which will measure a bunch of output. Usually have one input, one output. If you're working with normal unitary, that's for unitary embedding. So if you have such a thing, this is simply implements the corresponding circuit. So all I need to find is that once I have my graph, to get the star out of it and replace each star out of it. And that's very simple. Again, if your pattern has a flow, and if your underlying graph has a flow, then you can decompose in the star pattern. I'll show you an example to see. So any pattern with flow can give you star decomposition. And then once you have the star decomposition, you replace for each star what is the circuit, and then you combine the circuit and you get the circuit out. Okay, so very quickly, so that was our graph with the flow that we saw, okay? The first qubit were there. So what is the star decomposition? There is a polynomial time algorithm easily gives you that. It's not a big deal. So it gives you all the stars. So this is one star, this is the next star, this is the next star, okay, that they are combined together. You put each translation of that, I get the circuit back. Okay, so that's how it goes. And in fact, flow is capturing nothing but the wire that we know is there. Okay, so far so good. So is that the only way that we can correct? Because so far I show you for each qubit that you're measuring, you need to correct it with one particular single qubit. Well, it turns out, no, you don't need to, the next step is that you can correct with a set of qubits, and that's become interesting, because now we're coming out of the circuit picture. In the circuit picture, we have this wire, one qubit versus the other one, and the information going in. And that's the beauty of the measurement model, that you can correct with a set of qubits. So if I have such a graph, okay, you saw it before, you have three qubits, three input, three output, you have, I might decide that I want to correct qubit with a set of them, such plate. So this qubit will be corrected with that. But for this particular one, I will correct with all the three. Nothing will stop me. I'm applying a stabilizer. Stabilizer doesn't change the meaning of the graph. So based on the measure result of this measurement, I want to correct with all these three. And based on this one, I want to correct with these two. Something interesting that you need to note here, okay, and that's the partial order again. So I'll give the precise definition. That's the partial order. That means that now I can measure all those three qubits at the same time, okay, and based on the result of this one, apply the correction on the second line, so the depth is two, very optimal. But the beauty of it is that somehow, remember this one, is that I said that this is the causal structure. That means that's my first layer, that's the second layer. And here I have linked back to the past, okay? So this graph, which is normal because I'm making an entanglement these days, and nothing particular, you have this connection to the past, okay? Which are, again, in order to kill the surprise, is that these are the thing that in the circuit translation, when you will see, is like those bizarre time-like curves that is coming, time-like loop that comes out of it. So just to show you that when, you should realize that you're not supposed to, in the flow, I said that, like, you cannot measure, apply a stabilizer which touched to the past, because that qubit is gone by the moment that I'm measuring. I cannot apply a correction there. So if I'm saying for this qubit, apply a stabilizer there, but that stabilizer required that I do a Z correction on that, and that correction is gone already, it's not there. But the trick is that, okay, but I also applying it there, so this qubit is evenly connected. So you see one Z correction coming from here, and one Z correction coming here, and those two Z corrections are canceling each other. So the property which is important is that when you're correcting with the set, you are allowed to touch to the past in the measurement-based model. You're allowed to send some Z to the qubit which are not there, as long as they are evenly gone, because Z times Z is identity. So as long as your connection to the qubit in the past are even, you're okay. Not really, just in the definition is that. You see, it's a very simple definition. So your this is G, not F. An entanglement graph has a generalized flow. This is the work we did with Dan and Simone and Nedi. An entanglement graph has a generalized flow. If there exists now, instead of having a function from qubit to qubit, you're going from qubit to the subset of a qubit. Okay, so from all the qubits that you're measured to the qubit that you're prepared to subset, again, you have a partial order. And similar to the previous one, if your qubit is not, and I should mention that this is not just working for XY plane, this works for if your measurement is in XZ or YZ. That's important because we have already seen that in the measurements model, you can have different resources and you go to the XZ plane or YZ plane. So that correction set doesn't matter if you're XY, it's not just designed for XY plane. So this thing is saying that like the qubit that you want to correct should see the correction set oddly. Okay, so hence receive a Z that we wanted to cancel. So that's the oddly to see it. And anything else which is in the past, if you have a qubit which is in the past of your what you're doing it, should see you not oddly, means evenly. So evenly should see it. So that's the only condition that anything that is connected to the past should be touched evenly, anything which is in the future, and we want to correct it as oddly. So you might think it is a complicated definition, but again, Simone and Mehdi has recently shown there exists a polynomial time algorithm, it's a beautiful algorithm, which actually finds it. So you give the graph, and you can find in polynomial time whether the graph has a generalized flow and is constructive, or it doesn't have a generalized flow. But again, now, but the important thing is that now this is a necessary and sufficient condition. So that's a strong. So now, modular this notion of a stepwise strongly international lecture on what it is. But basically, saying that if you give me a resource, the only way to do deterministic computation is if you have generalized flow. There is no other way to do it. Okay. So if you don't have it, it's basic. I don't know how to translate it in a physics, but if you don't have it, you don't have enough space to let your byproducts cancel out and to be correcting it. So that's a necessary sufficient condition, which is important on top of that.
And this is something you can actually predetermine once
yes.
you know the structure, human structure.
Yes, from the graph.
Right. And then this is the condition for you to be able to go backwards and correct it, go back. Even though that qubit is already processed.
Yeah, but actually I don't need to correct it because the time this condition is in such a way that the correction which goes to the back, they are canceling each other, so the qubit doesn't need to be really there. So it seems that because of the stabilizer to make the, so you see the story is that in order to make that correction, a possible correction, you need to apply stabilizer because those are only poly operations that you can apply and doesn't change the semantic of your computation, okay? So I need to apply the full stabilizer. But this full stabilizer required a Z in the back. But that qubit is not there, but it's not a problem because there is two Z coming from my stabilizer or even Z coming from the stabilizer. So they're canceling out. So if you like, yes, this Z correction going to the past, the qubit is not there, but they are not there either, so because they cancel each other. So.
But whether you can do it or not is predetermined in some sense, right?
Precisely. That's so from the Z. I know you don't trust me, but that's the way it is.
No,
it's like precisely the importance and the strength of the result is that from the graph, it's a graph theory result. That from the graph, you can find that, and there is a polynomial. And I need to talk quickly about that algorithm so you can see. So then let's play the same game that we had this nice star decomposition. We do our star decomposition for the graph. Now you have deep flow. And now what you get is that nasty edges that goes to the back. Because in the circuit, this is what we were expecting. These are the qubits that goes to the back. Okay? So what we like to do, the so what? Okay, so we have the qubit to the back, so what? So what is that the pattern with G-flow, we saw that give us a cyclic quantum circuit. Okay, so whenever you have a pattern with G-flow, it give you quantum circuit with time-like carriers with a cycle. But on the other hand, pattern with G-flow is still implementing unitary embedding, okay? They are unitary operators, they're nothing there. So this is here's the observation in the punchline of the talk that there exists a subclass of cyclic circuits which are implementing unitary operator, okay? So they seem to be cyclic, but actually they're not cyclic. So they are seemingly cyclic operator, and we want to characterize them. Okay, so I want the last thing that I talk about is the characterization of them because of the program that I want to be able to show how to use those ideas to parallelize the algorithm. And characterization is actually quite simple. So characterization of good loops turns out to be a very simple result that any loop can be traversed back to the future via a new path. So if you're going to the past, then you need to have and find another path which brings you to the future. Then that's a good one in the circuit. And so for our circuit that we saw, and it turned to be a unitary operator, you have this thing that, okay, I have this bizarre stretching interaction there, but at the same time, you can find another path that is going to bring a feature. So whenever you have that condition, those circuits are in fact implementing unitary operator, and they are linear operator, and hence you can translate them to a normal circuit or to a measurement-based model. Okay, so I have 5 minutes, or 10 minutes. I can very quickly, so I will just show you because to characterize this thing is a very simple graph theory. Exactly. I'll bring you back to where you started, and I will carry on giving you the same talk forever. Okay, so how do we get, so the idea of the proof of this characterization is coming from, okay, so let's not to characterize in the circuit, just characterize the good loop in a G flow, because I want to see that, I know that that's the only way I can do a deterministic computation. And to do that, I'm just stealing this terminology from Neil's work, vicious cycle. The thing that is not good if you want to do flow computation is this sort of thing, okay? So basically, this is a slide for Neil. Perhaps he's the only one understanding, but it's okay. So the vicious cycle is that when you have a closed path with no two consecutive non-flow edges, okay? So this thing, vicious cycle, these are the wishes that you don't want them. These are the thing that goes to the past, translate. But the main result is that you show that whenever you have a generalized flow, which is this thing's correcting with the set, will allow you to find a flow. So within a generalized flow, you always have a flow, which are the normal wire of your circuit, but with some possible vicious cycle. So all we need to find now is to find what type of vicious cycle exists in a generalized flow, and then we are done. Well, and now here I'm going to use this recent work of Mehdi and Simon. They, in their algorithm for generalized flow. So flow or generalized flow will be such a thing. So you have this entangled graph state, the input's always in the first layer of computation, the output is there, and you have this layer of computation. They introduce the notion of maximally delayed G flow. Means that you're interested to measure a qubit at the latest possible time, you know, because you have different type of G flow. G flow is not unique. But the one that you're interested is like push the qubit at the latest possible time. And actually, there is two interesting things about it. First of all, this gives you optimal depth. So this is kind of, if you're interested in the lower bound, the G flow will give you the optimal depth. And there is this nice lemma that show that any vertices which belongs to some particular layer is the unique odd neighbor of a set in level I plus one. This kind of terminology that's similar to backward cone in the some initial paper of Robert Hansen and say this is characterizing it. So if you have a particular qubit sitting there, because it's maximally delayed, then we know that there is a unique subset of the qubit sitting there, which this is the odd neighborhood of that. And that's very, very essential for the structure of the G flow and for the structure of what I'm going to show you. So using that lemma, then you can show two simple lemma. First of all, that there exists a matching between different layers. That matching will give me the flow, which is the wires, the normal wires that I wanted. But then, because that qubit is the unique odd neighborhood of this particular set, so any connection to the past should return back to the future. So whenever I'm going to the back, I should be able to return it. Otherwise, that qubit also be oddly seen by that particular set. So the whole essence is there. So just to summarize, so in the measurement pattern, in the measurement-based world, there is the set of all the patterns, then you have deterministic pattern. So deterministic pattern is the very simple definition. It means that all the branches are the same. And there's lots of issue of actually they are with the same probability, but let's just keep it simple. So there is all the same. But within the deterministic pattern, we have two particular class that we classify. Those patterns who have flow or has generalized flow. the pattern which flows go nicely directly to a quantum circuit. They are nothing but the quantum circuit. They are direct translation, as we already seen in the very initial paper. But the pattern with the generalized flow are the interesting one, because when you see them, they are kind of supposedly implementing cyclic on the circuit, but then we are interested in to be able to turn them back to the normal circuit and keep the low depths, okay? And it's obvious, I didn't mention it, but obvious if you have time like curves, it's make it in the depths smaller. Instead of going to new layer, you can always do interaction with something which is already in the past, so you're not introducing a new layer. So the plan is to be able to open the loop, if you like, not to changing the semantic and keep the depth low, keep the low depths. And I'm not fully having the answer. I thought I have it, but every day is changing. So, but I can show you the whole picture. The idea is to find some topological rewriting rules. The topological rewriting rules, so the simple one is this. So, look, this is another one with the kind of bizarre curves, okay? So this cube, we need to interact with that. So if that first logical qubit was in the state place, then I know how to open that. That becomes a control knot. So the semantic, if you do the calculation for all of these things, are the same. Where are they coming from? Well, no surprise, they're coming from our graph. This is translated to this measurement pattern. That was translated to this measurement pattern. Wow, these are the two X measurements, and that's the pivoting and local complementation. And when you do those things, you get that graph. So again, we saw that the Clifford, magical Clifford, come back to the picture. So this Clifford operation that we know in the measurement-based model, we can remove them and take it over, kind of introducing, if you like, loop, not really loop, but they are making the depths smaller. Because we can remove all of them using the, again, graphical tools, we're getting these things which has a generalized flow, which has the minimal depth. So again, the Clifford operation insertion comes back. But this thing is not the end of the story. I think there is a couple of other topological rewriting loops there, but we should be all coming out of this picture. It's like nothing else but some graphical rules which translate to make sure that when you open, they have flow. So basically, the question has become that, given a graph which has a G flow but doesn't have a flow, what are the set of unlocal complementation, I don't know, the re-local complementation, re-pivoting or whatever, reinserting the thing which that now makes the graph to have a flow, because then the flow is open up. But, and the question is that, are we gonna keep the depth low or not? So, and that's interesting because I don't know, maybe the same way that we have already seen a logarithmic depth separation, it's not possible to open the loop and not blow up the depths. And that's an open question, that somehow, as long as we are staying in a measurement-based model, we keep our graph very connected with all those bizarre loops, the depths stay low, constant or small and logarithmic. The moment you go to the circuit and you want to open up all these things, the depths are blowing up. So that's more or less the whole thing. So the open question I already mentioned, we need to have full set of rewriting rules for opening loops, and basically, like I said, the exact trade-off. And trying to understand that, again, is entanglement is essential? Is there something there, or it's just a bunch of rules that we need to find it? And there is also other thing, you know, I talk only with the graph with flow and G flow, but there are other deterministic patterns. Although our G flow is necessary and sufficient condition, but there are some dirty trick for the Pauli flow. The graph that you have a flow, sometimes it doesn't have a generalized flow, but you can have some Pauli measurement, and it has some other determinism thing. So that will be also the game. Again, so there is much more to learn from the type of deterministic pattern that we implement in measurement-based model, and when it's translated back to the circuit, what is happening to the depth. And also, you know, because it's like the last thing is, it's kind of, as I mentioned, is the depth, the notion of depth complexity, it gives you a different way of comparing models. We know that topological quantum computing, all this new model of measurement-based quantum computing of Jens and Martin, David, yeah, sorry, I need a coffee. David are all equivalent in terms of computational, but what if in terms of the depth? So there is this issue of fluctuation depth, is it smaller, is it bigger? And that could be also nice to be able to say something about. So that's it, thank you very much.
I got a question. So if you have a graph which does not satisfy your criteria, so then you say there's no reasonable method for compensating the randomness. So if I still then
no, let me say. So if it has our criteria, then the angle of measurement are not important in order to make the deterministic computation. Okay. So if you give me a graph which doesn't satisfy the G-flow condition, then you might be still get the deterministic condition, but for a very particular angle of measurement. So that's what I meant by this dirty trick. So what we're giving is giving you the generic solution. But if you give me a graph which doesn't have the G-flow, so there is actually, we know it, there is something called poly flow, which is not necessary. Sometimes you can do, if you do a bunch of qubits with the poly measurement, then suddenly the rest can go.
But if you want to be stupid, so you give me a graph which does not have the G-flow, yeah, okay, there okay. might be singular solutions where I yeah. still have control, but I don't look for them. I really apply measurements in any directions I would like. So what then happens? I can't in general compensate the randomness anymore. Does it mean I'm computing a random function, or in what sense is it not powerful? Can you have a feeling for that, or yeah, can you show that the
No, but by no means not powerful. There is like lots of interesting questions. What is probabilistic measurement-based quantum computing? So maybe the branch are not exactly the same, but they are with different probability implementing unitary which are close to each other. So that could be the case. Maybe that actually I don't need to be clever. I mean, I just randomly and somehow luckily at the end you can compute all the 2 to the n branches and you know which correction needs to be done. No, there is by no means that those resources are useless. It's just a matter of that you cannot in advance decide what you can do with those stuff. So and there is this other issue that if it doesn't have a G-flow, it's not the end of the story, because usually when you don't have a G-flow, there's one or two vertices that are creating the problem for you. So maybe you can identify those and just make those to be not correctable and the rest to be correctable and see what will happen. So there is all those open questions that I don't know the answer.
Else?
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed you have this vicious cycle.
Yes.
So does that mean that you really like graphs with very high curve?
With a
high curve means you don't have a loop. All loops are quite big, not very big.
I think Neil is the expert to answer that because he has this paper about characterization of graphs with loop or not loop. So a little bit.
So I have to take a look at issues of girth. Basically, when you have these cycles, you're looking at basically a sequence of dependencies between measurement results or potential sequences of dependencies.
Yeah.
It's not clear that when you have a larger cycle that these are possibly going to disappear in any way.
Just a short question and a comment. It just sounds to me that you're actually looking at some kind of integrability condition. If I just integrability
okay.
condition, when you think about tangential, the group, the algebra, and so on and so forth, but that we will discuss later on.
Okay.
Earlier, you responded to a question about open loops and then bringing in ancilla and so on.
Yeah.
Those, you need the condition that it would not disrupt the whole canon, in some sense, right? And
not changing the semantic, yeah.
So that you use it and throw it away, and it does not affect in any way at any step the grand design you have.
Yes, so that's why I show you like one example. Where is it? One example of this thing. So in a sense, this is an ancilla, okay, but it's a particular ancilla which says it's a plus state. It cannot be an arbitrary quantum state. And if I have that one, I do this, and they are exactly the same. So it's not. Is I'm opening it, but I'm adding the same qubit. So I don't know it in all the full details, like how I'm supposed to open all of those loops, and what is the way not to change the semantic. There's lots of little trick. Maybe you can bring some, like, you know, add a identity, which is a bunch of XX teleportation to add in. So it seems that you need to have a space, okay, because of this local complementation that, like, it's like you add extra qubits so to open up the space. So this is a very, very intuitive thing, but I don't know if that's the only way. Maybe there is some other way. And actually, perhaps there is other way, because again, in many other work beforehand, we saw that there are graph states which are equivalent, but they are not isomorphic. So maybe that's also the issue, that some of them give you loops, some of them won't give you a loop. So
but the important thing is that you have a set of household rules for what these sensors cannot.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's the crucial thing.
Yeah.
One last thing is that with all these circles that you were trying to represent, I haven't quite gotten to the definition of quantum depth yet. But do you see some kind of...
This is the quantum depth. So it's like how many layers that you can. So for example, for this pattern, for this circuit, this is one layer, second layer, third layer, fourth layer, fifth layer. So it's like we define the computer science in the notion of depth, that the one qubit cannot interact at the same time with many other things, although physicists say that it can, and you turn on the Hamiltonian and something happens. But usually in the circuit, the notion of this means like how many layers you have and those gates that can be applied in parallel. Because imagine I have another J gate here, another J gate here, so they are not interacting in any sense, so I can put them in the same. That's the notion of depth in a circuit.
Depth means time.
Yes, so the amount of time you can do a circuit.
Keeping your time.
So it's quite different from decoherence, the immunity from decoherence. Right? In your very first slide, there's one statement, and from thence, help. It's not compatible, not necessarily the same thing.
No, okay, so maybe I confused. When I said, like, from noise, whatever, I meant, like, it's like the reason.
Decoherence, you use that word.
Okay, so let me precise what I mean. The recipe of flow, RG flow, will tell you how to translate projection to measurement, okay?
Yeah.
Or another way that whenever you make a measurement, you're creating two branches,
right.
Okay? So these two branches, we are interested in one particular branch to do our computation, okay? So we need to do something if this other branch happens to make sure that within that branch, the computation is exactly equal to that one. So it's not like against the coherence, but if you think of measurement as creating error, that's like correcting the error. It's teleportation, basically. Like in the teleportation that you have four possibilities, then what we do some poly correction in order to make sure that all those three possible branches is the same thing. So it's that. It's not any...
It's not related to decoherence except through noise. Maybe there's some indirect.
One of your very beginning motivations was lower depth might be easier to... Errors might be easier to correct. Mm-hmm. But that's a pretty tangential.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so maybe we should stop.
Yeah.